what you're about to hear is an incoherent mess.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of The Masked Podcasters. Who are these bathwater drinking maniacs coming at you through the magic of podcasting? My name is Shannon, and as usual, I'm joined here by my brother Jake.
What is this madness that we're doing, Shannon? Podcasting something or other that we
used to do? It's 2024. It's 2024.
Used to do last year early.
We're much older. One of us is decrepit. I don't want to talk about which one.
Yep.
But we're back. Man. We're back finally. We're back. And we do want to acknowledge it has been a long time since we've punched anything out. If you're still with us, thank you so much for staying with us and just being hopeful, madly clicking refresh every day to see whether there's a new episode. It's been a little while. Not really by choice. We've had some circumstances that have precluded us from recording, but we are back and we intend to be back in some sort of pattern. Some sort of discernible pattern that you can follow us with.
Relief. Well, I mean, we did go on our normal web browsing podcast server, and I logged in and then tried to start a recording, and it said, "You no longer can get the free version. Please pay for this now." And we said, "No, thank you."
Yeah, we value our audience, but not that much. And so what we did is I said to Jake, well, surely Zoom allows us to record. And looking at Zoom, it says, but it's capped at 40 minutes. And I said, well, that's not even half an episode, so we can't use that.
When was the last time we went 40 minutes?
because that's what people are hanging out for. They are hanging out for a very long, rambling, incoherent nightmare of a podcast. I think that's what's missing in the market.
On a platform that not everyone has. Probably most of them don't even have access to, but still.
Yeah. And so we're targeting a very niche, what I call the mental patients, but you put whatever label you want on them. And we welcome you, crazy people. Welcome back. And for those joining for the first time, what are you doing here and how did you find us? Seriously, let us know, because we've got no idea why you would do that.
No clue at all. Why would you click on this?
Today, we're talking Saltburn.
Yep.
And people know that because they've clicked on the title and it says it. I hate these podcasts who pretend like you don't know what we're doing today.
What are we doing today? It could be a movie about rainbows.
Yeah, unless you're blindly stabbing at your phone, hoping that you're trying to get how did this get made, and you end up with us instead for some reason.
There's no shuffle button on podcasts. There's no. You can't do that.
So we're doing Saltburn. And gee, it was a bit weird because I watched an hour and a half of a movie called Brightburn. Very different.
I'm sorry.
I watched Brightburn. You know, I think about it. Yeah, so do I. The reason I want to do Saltburn because it's one of those movies, and it's a bit of a trend we're seeing. Movies that they go viral for whatever reason. Now, I'm reminded by particularly Bird Box was the one that got me, because it's a good movie. Bird Box.
It was everywhere.
And everyone was saying you've got to watch it. And there is, we don't want to talk about the pandemic because it's now 2024, but there was a period of time where all people could do. And I can understand why those sorts of movies went viral in that time, because that's all people could do. So we're just intently watching. This one's a bit different. And, you know, we've talked a lot in present episodes about diversification of media and how people have got so much choice now. And even as we sit here, there's another two or three streaming platforms that if we actually want to see everything, you've got to subscribe to. It's now Paramount Plus, and you know, it just seems like there's a never-ending supply of streaming, and people are cutting back now because cost of living has gone bananas.
You can't do it.
So this one went viral, and I know why it went viral. Not that I've seen it, because I'm not on social media. I took a pill and now I'm no longer viral. but I can see why this one went, because I think this one was sort of it's dressed up as a very classy, regal environment. And yet there's some fairly horrific things that happen in it. And that's clearly, I think I would assume that the big the big push for being viral is that it's got some shocking moments, and it's got a twist ending, I guess.
Yeah, well, we can talk about the twist ending later, but I'm not sure there's many shocking moments. I was never really surprised by this movie, and I mean, it's shot very well. They obviously, it's a competent filmmaker. The acting is very good. The cast list is pretty good.
It's a great cast list. I love the way that this film looks. Do you want to have a crack at trying to describe what this movie's about?
I mean, I can certainly try. All right, so we've got Oliver Quick, which is a great superhero name. He sounds like the Flash. He's going to Oxford, and basically he falls in love with this rich socialite, Felix, and he manipulates his way into getting invited to his holiday home or his house for the week or for the summer. It seems like Felix takes a person away with him every holiday, and he meets his family, the Catton family, Sir James, Elsbeth. Am I saying that right?
Elsbeth.
And then you've got the mother, who I can't remember her actual name.
Elsbeth is the mother.
Albus is the mother. So who's the sister?
Doesn't matter.
And their weird eccentric friend, who's there as well. And basically, Oliver's trying to infiltrate the family, and by being very weird and creepy and spying on Felix, falls deeper and deeper in love with him until some bizarre things start happening to the family. Spoiler heavy, this part. And the family members start disappearing and leaving the family and being falsely accused and dying after the lies that Oliver keeps telling come to fruition. Yeah, and basically the whole family gets wiped out.
You know, and I think my challenge with this movie is that it thinks it's smarter than it is. It thinks it's got way more to say than it does. Yep. It's setting itself up as a class war, the poor, and it's let's eat the rich kind of mentality. But it has nothing to say about that. It actually doesn't. It's not commentary on it. It's almost a parody of rich people. Well, it is a parody of rich people.
Well, like the Catton family are they're super English. Like, they dress in full suits and ties to go to dinner, and they have full wait staff. And this is a massive mansion. We're talking huge Victorian 1300s mansion with, you know, swimming pools and lakes and a full wait staff. Like, it's ridiculous how fancy this place is.
But it's not. It doesn't actually say anything about rich people. Yeah, they're clueless as. And it is, particularly Elsbeth, the matriarch of the family, and to a lesser extent, Sir James?
Sir James, yep.
Yeah, so Richard E. Grant's character. Yeah, they are clueless about the outside world, what things would cost. You think it's that typical, if you ask them what a loaf of bread costs, they would have no idea. They would be like, it's $50. They had no idea what things are worth and how people relate. And Oliver is a bit of an oddity amongst them. It's a bit like a zoo to start with. They're very interested to hear about all his family drama, which he's told them that his dad's an alcoholic who passed out and died in the street, I think.
Yeah, fell and hit his head. Yeah,
fell and hit his head.
His mum's an alcoholic.
And that you know, he doesn't want to go home. And so there's this sort of faux sympathy that particularly Elsbeth wants to take him under the wing. There's another character there, another female, Carrie Mulligan's character, whose name I didn't learn and don't care about. She's there, but she's overstayed her welcome. So that there's this, it's there to set up that this family is quite caring to a point, to a degree, useful to them.
I think with Oliver, it's more of he's a curiosity rather than feel sympathy. He's an outsider. He's not polished. He's very polite, and he's very English, and he's very like she says, even like he's how polite he is grating to her. She says at one point, but there's something not right about him, and I think everyone kind of sees that, and he's not the upper class, and everyone fights. It's like a dancing monkey for them at some point, at the very start. He's like, let's see how he reacts to this situation.
Yeah, and we get a look at Oliver at Oxford. He's clearly not fitting in. He gets picked up. The really weird kid picks him up. So This is a kid who screams and yells in the middle of a library. Do math. Or
give me an equation.
So he's you know, so it is, Oliver's a different type of odd in the sense that he's incredibly quiet, well spoken. He presents classier than his story lets on, that he's a kid from the streets made good and turning up into Oxford. So that's the kind of anomaly we've get with Oliver, but he's clearly socially awkward and doesn't understand how to relate to people is the setup that we get. We're led to believe, though, as we get to the end, and again, this is spoilers. If you're downloading a podcast that says we're going to talk about Saltburn, don't expect that we're not going to talk about it, right? What are you doing here? Go and watch it and then come back, or don't. Whatever. I'm not your mother. So
as long as you download, I don't care what you do.
As long as you download this and listen to this, I don't really give a shit what you do. But you know, we're led to believe that this is a trap that he's set from the very start. So all of this, everything we're seeing is him meticulously laying a trap that pays off in what, 10 years?
It's kind of unknown time, but yeah, let's say 10 years.
But it's well into the future when this is going to pay off. He doesn't even know when it's going to pay off. It could be 20 or 30.
Or if it's going to pay off at all. Like he's confident, but he's not, he doesn't know for sure.
So are we to believe then that this socially awkward person is a persona that he is putting on? He is laying this trap early days for the rich, in the hope that he will get picked up by a rich person, taken home, and being able to infiltrate their family. That's what we as the audience are expected to.
I'm not sure it's that early on that he decides to make the plan, because he can't know the full story of the family that he's going to. I think he wants the attention of Felix. He gets the attention of Felix, and then once he's there, then the plan starts after that very first dinner party.
So as an audience member, do you think he genuinely had romantic intentions on Felix, or is this part of the plan?
No, I think at the start he wanted to be him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's portrayed very well that he has romantic feelings for him. Like he says he loved him and always loved him and blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. I think he wanted to be him. He wanted to be in that social circle. He didn't love the person.
And that's obvious, because he wants Saltburn. He wants that lifestyle. He's infiltrating for the purpose of gaining not only the money, but the culture and the high society. So he is in love with the idea of Felix potentially rather than Felix himself. Yep. There is a couple of scenes that don't lend itself to that. And then we'll get there in due time. People who've seen it, we're getting there.
I think there was the idea, or in his head, he was in love with him. That rationalized the fixation on him. And I think that's why some of the earlier stuff, I think a rational person probably would have realized, no, I don't want him. I want to be him. No, I don't want him. But I think...
Which also doesn't explain that particular scene. So there's some mixed messaging the film is doing there. And I actually think that scene gets in the way of the story. And we'll get there. But
we'll get there.
He sets this trap early. This is all in service of infiltrating a person, because the very first night they go out together as a group, he sets that up. You see in a flashback at the end of it that he set all of this stuff up. So he absolutely had in mind that this is about infiltration of a rich group in the very early inception of the relationship with Felix.
I don't think the plan to take over Saltburn was the original plan. I think to infiltrate that group and be part of that group was the plan, and then it slowly, quickly evolved as he realized how good is this life.
Yeah, and Felix Felix is a bit of a caricature of a rich, completely oblivious person who is actually, I genuinely thought, is quite a caring person.
Well, the mother even says, you have nice things to say about everyone. Like, yeah. She actually says that.
He's probably the best character, as in the most pure or the nicest character across the board.
And there is very little wrong.
Yeah, there's a bit of ugliness early days. There's a bit of a conflict, if I recall correctly.
Well, he brings people into his life, has, you know, not fun with them, but has them around for a few months, and then basically tells them to bugger off, which is what he did. Started cleaning his room, and he said, "I'm not a child, you know, bugger off." Didn't invite him out the next time.
What's the tension before that? There's a reason why that scene is tense. And I don't recall what that is.
No, I don't recall what it is either.
But there's a tense moment. And I think there's a moment just before that where he hooks up with a woman who was basically cast aside by Felix.
That woman, yeah, who appears at his door and asks him for alcohol. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically gets stood up by Felix because he's more interested in someone else. Yeah. And they end up hooking up for a little bit. There's some they make out. He then lies to him and says he's out, or he's not available. And then he said
he would text him. Yeah. He's like, we're gonna. Then he obviously was checking his phone religiously, didn't see that, and then he went out and checked on him, and he was actually there. Didn't invite him out. So
at
obviously
the pub,
he was
didn't invite him up. So yeah, so there is it's a real obsession at that stage, and I tend to agree with you. I don't necessarily think that's the plan at that stage. It is a genuine kind of obsession with being with him or being him and being in that social circle, something he's clearly never had. Now it's revealed later that Oliver comes from quite a normal domestic family, sort of middle class family. And there's nothing wrong with his mum or his dad.
Yeah.
Not super well off, but you know, middle class, which he's been lying about to build that character, that cred. And he just wants to be part of the high class or the high society, I think, at that stage. And also not be lonely, I guess, which is fair. He's with the only other weird kid who is clearly a bit loopy, and he's trying to integrate himself in. I think there's a romantic entanglement there. I don't know what that is, whether that is I want to be this guy, but I also want to bang this guy. And there's enough lingering moments.
There's so many confusing thoughts going through his head. And obviously he's not mentally right.
Yeah.
He's not mentally right. So all these confusing, conflicting emotions are probably messing with him, but he's trying very hard to get close to him either way.
There is so many lingering moments, arm touches that are innocent to 99% of the population, but are super meaningful here is that there's so many longing looks.
And they're always super close talking. Yeah. Like they're always very close in the frame together. Like, you know, very closely shot together, zoomed right in to see how close everyone is to each other.
Yeah. And it's beautifully shot. It's almost shot a lot. It's a bit dreamscape for mine. Like if it suddenly revealed it was all a dream at the end of it, I wouldn't be surprised. It's ethereal in the way it's shot. And it is, I think it's a testament to the filmmaking that these characters feel like a caricature, but also real and a real family. Like it does feel like, and you know, full admissions here, neither of us are high society here. And if you can't pick that up by the way that
I beg your pardon, sir.
The way we talk smart.
Smart talking.
We are certainly, and always have been, working class, middle class families. So we are certainly not rich by anything, and it is another world. And there are people who are well off and can, you know, afford a new car and all that. They're not the people we're even talking about here. We are talking about old money, and we're talking about absolute fuck off money. Massive mansion.
That's the way I describe it. Yeah, fuck off money. Like you can do whatever you want at any time.
So you're talking about people who pay for servants. The lawns are impeccably maintained. It's got a massive big hedge maze. Hedge maze is either you're in The Shining and something bad's going to happen, or you're rich. Like there's no middle ground.
Yeah. Like he smashes a mirror and it's fixed in the morning without waking him up. that's the kind of money you can't,
And it seems like where Oliver's being led around through Saltburn, through just this is the library, he's, you know, dead relative, dead relative, dead relative.
Or, you know, famous historian memorabilia.
Yeah, so you get a beautiful tracking shot through the mansion to get a scale and size, and how out of kilter he is, because you know there's a car sent for him when he eventually gets invited to Saltburn and they go, he turns up a day early, and he turns up with his roller bag full of luggage, and he's taken a train and then a taxi himself. He hasn't waited for the driver, who would have, now presumably he would have been told that, but he's turned up early to further demonstrate the fish out of water
and the mentality. Need to be there. Like, he can't wait. He just can't wait. He has to be there right away.
So you get this sense that he is absolutely, completely not of this world. Mm. And it is, and once the movie goes to Saltburn, it doesn't really leave Saltburn. No. So once you get to that mansion and that manor and that estate, that's it for the film. So you've left Oxford and you are there.
Because everything revolves around it. Everything, his mind, his goal, everything revolves around Saltburn. It is an idealistic place. And I can't remember the wacky friend's name, but he at the party, he very much says, this is not your life. This will be a memory of a summer that you had one time that you tell your children for the rest of your life.
He's a cousin. A cousin. He's a mixed race.
I can't remember the relationship.
Pretty sure he's a cousin. So he's a family relation. So he's a cousin, and it's a mixed race. So he's kind of already I'll use this term in the parochial term, black sheep of the family. I think because there is a bit of a race thing going on there. But he's clearly of that ilk. And he's our spiteful character, probably the only spiteful character towards Oliver. You don't belong here. This is exclusive to me and my family, and you shouldn't be here. And he's the opposition. And at that stage, without us knowing more about what's going on, you're kind of a little bit, that's sad for Oliver. Well, there's an unset. There's a beautiful vibe that happens here. Is it's very sure why you're unsettled, and is it because you're watching someone awkward trying to find their spot, or is there something else underlying? And ultimately, there's something underlying with it, and it does quite a good job at, you know, that twist that he's not telling the truth about his family. If you don't see that telegraphed, there's something seriously wrong, because that's not your twist. That's a plot beat.
I just assumed he was lying. Like, yeah. It didn't even occur to me that actually happened.
Yeah.
Like I straight away I said he's lying. I said that didn't happen.
And because they're so cultured and because they're so prim and proper, is even after that's discovered quite innocently, I think, innocently discovered. Because he tries to do a nice thing. Now, is it a nice thing? Maybe, I don't know. Is there some other intention there that...
Well, I think it was almost like your time's up, go home, was the gist that I got from it. Like, he's kind of had enough of him at this point and wants him to
go. So do you think he's got a sneaking suspicion before that? Do you think...
No, I don't think so. I think he's had enough of him and wants him to go home.
It's discovered because he leaves his phone somewhere, doesn't he? He leaves his phone in the
bathroom, and he saw his missed calls from his mum.
Yeah, he takes that call, one of those calls, or rings her back, and organises to go and meet as a surprise. I think at that stage he's got an inkling something's up.
I never got that inkling. I always thought he's just had enough of him and his time was done, because he seems to get over people pretty quickly. That was my inflection from it, but either way makes sense.
And so it's discovered that he's from a quite a middle class background, and effectively it's, you probably should go, you know.
Well, I think I won't expose you to the
broader family, but you should go.
Thinking about it now, the way he acts when he meets his mum and dad, it's not surprise.
No.
There's very little surprise on Felix's face. It's like, I've got you kind of thing.
To me, it was a bit of a sport in watching someone attempt to claw themselves out of their class into another class, and all he wanted to do was watch him squirm.
Yeah, I don't feel that, because Felix isn't that kind of character. I don't think Felix is that kind of character.
But is it saying a bit that the rich people have always kind of got that in him? That he's a bit more of a...
I think it's very open to interpretation.
Because I certainly saw it as a bit of sport for him, that he'd caught him in a lie. He'd probably, to your point, got bored of him, and this was a really good way of taking him down. But it then wasn't, I'm going to expose you to my entire family. It was effectively a very quiet, we're kind of done here.
Yeah, but I feel like if he did know beforehand, he would have planned to leave him there. Like, why bring him back to Saltburn if you've already exposed him?
To rub him in, to go and get his stuff, to, you know, to be the polite thing of saying goodbye to his parents so that he didn't have to go and explain.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. It just seems like there's a very much while he's been exposed in a horrible lie, it's still polite and friendly for him to say goodbye and do that kind of thing. Because he doesn't want to expose him to the family. He doesn't.
No,
he says,
I'm not going to do that. The summer's already over. Let's just be done after your party.
Yeah, that's right. And even lets him have the party. Like
you'll be a person we'd never talk about again.
You'll
be a blip on the radar.
And so he's now exposed, completely exposed. He knows that at least somebody knows his horrible secret, that he came from a normal childhood. And then he accelerates the plan at this stage, and he then has to bump off Felix. He has to get rid of the cousin in the middle of that. So he sets it up so that it looks like he's stealing stuff and sending it to Sotheby's, because there's another plot point about that family not doing as well, of money, but not actually don't have the money in the pockets. That the family, that Felix's family does. So bumps off Felix with a drug overdose or something, and then systematically kind of removes people. And keeps going until effectively he's the owner of Saltburn.
The mother has a weird obsession with Oliver, like even to the point where after Felix dies,
post the death, I think that's where it kicks in. Yeah,
she's like,
so Felix dies.
You're not leaving now, are you? And he's like, no.
And so there is this stoicism that the British people are known for and the rich are known for is on display to the nth degree. When Felix is dead, his body is being carted through the estate by the medical examiner or the coroner, and they insist on continuing to eat breakfast.
Yep. You have to finish your breakfast.
We're not going to acknowledge our feelings, stiff British upper lip, all that stuff. Yep. And it's quite a tense scene. It's beautifully acted in that. And Oliver picks up pretty quickly that he's just going to have to go along with whatever the head of the family's going. So he's actually shown to be eating and encouraging, where it's the other two characters, the cousin and the sister, that are having a horrendously hard time to try. They're not going to do that.
They're just pouring wine all over the table.
So Oliver's picked up, and he then gets in the good graces of Elsbeth as a pseudo replacement, effectively, for Felix, to the point then where Richard E. Grant, he offers him money to go,
and obviously he takes it.
Yeah. So what is it going to take for you to leave? I don't reckon that's the first time that's happened.
No.
So I think Felix has brought people home who've overstayed their welcome and been paid off. It's the same with Elsbeth's friend, the Carrie Mulligan character, who ultimately is killed. Dies,
yeah.
Everyone dies in this.
It's kind of, that's kind of glossed over.
But to that point, it's kind of like how she is in the family. She is an annoyance, and then her death is kind of like a relief. People are happy.
They're like, oh, she died. I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
So there is a great indifference to human suffering, I think, that comes through, which is a very. And this is where the movie thinks it's smarter than is. It's trying to say that rich people don't care, but it doesn't do anything with that material. They're a caricature. And I think Rosamund Pike as Elsbeth is amazing. And she plays it with this mix of empathy, sadness, giddiness about, you know, the being able to experience another, you know, a bit like you'd go to the zoo and see all the poor people. You know, it's a bit of a circus show for her.
Yeah, I like the line where she says, I don't like ugly people.
Yeah,
I have it since I was young.
Her big concern was that he was going to be ugly. And I think it's Felix that makes the point. It's like, well, he's not a munter or something, whatever he calls him.
Yeah.
And she's like, yes, but you're kind about everyone, so you would say that about anyone. So she's quite relieved that he's a good looking guy. And then, you know, that systematic kind of integration with every single family member, you see him go through the machinations, including the sister, which is another scene we need to get to. So, let's hit those because we've jumped around a bit. But there is two scenes that I think the reason that this movie went viral is because they are A, gross out scenes designed to do something. And I still can't work out what they designed to do other than make this film go viral. I don't think that's why they're there.
I don't think the filmmakers went into this going, I'm going to shoot these scenes to become an internet darling and everyone watch my movie, because it's it went straight to streaming.
No, I agree with that, but I don't understand why they're there.
I think it's to it's A, to get people to watch the movie.
If they're not there, this is a run of the mill, piss weak psychological thriller.
Yeah, basically.
Those scenes then either elevate it or detract it, whichever way you look at it, by giving people something to talk about. Because when people, having spoken to people and said, oh, I watched Saltburn, I'm going to do it for the podcast, people go, how gross was that scene?
Yeah. Yep.
And it does take away from other stuff in it. But it does feel a bit hollow. And the whole film feels a bit hollow because I think it wants to be smart and it wants to have something to say about society, but it doesn't ever get there. So the two scenes we're talking about, one is that he hooks up with the sister while she's on her period.
Yep.
And he licks his fingers and there's a whole bunch of stuff there. And I think she licks her own like there's this whole scene that happens.
Vampiristic.
Does he call himself a vampire at some stage?
He does.
So there's that. And that happens outside after she's looking at him. She's highly sexualized. Like she is just on tender hooks for this guy and wants to, every scene she's in, it looks like she's writhing in pleasure, just waiting for him. So you've got that juxtaposition was he understands that he needs to do something with that in order to integrate him into the family, I think. So that's why he does that. And he kind of, that could be a very normal scene without all that, but that's what happens.
Well, I think you're right that if you just did that scene where she wasn't on her period and it was just normal outdoors, someone catches them, it's fine. It becomes a run-of-the-mill psychological thriller. It's a taboo.
And again, I am very, I'm not going to judge anyone. You do that, that's good. It's a human bodily. It happens once a month.
It's the image of him, A, putting his fingers on her, and B, the scene afterwards where he washes it off because you can see the marks around his face. And that image is what get people talking. That's the money shot right there.
So it's that, but that actually pales in significance to the other scene that gets people more talking about this movie, which is the bathtub scene.
I thought you were going to talk about the graveyard scene.
Those are the two that stood out in my mind was the period sex scene and the bathtub scene. And we will get to the graveyard scene because that's right at the end.
Yeah.
But I'll describe in the best way I can the bathtub scene. So Jacob Elordi's character, Felix, is taking a bath, as rich people are wont to do, apparently. And he is pleasuring himself in the bath, which, bad idea. I'm just going to put it out there. It's a bad idea.
I was sitting there going, why? There's a shower right there, dude.
If you're going to do that, shower is predominantly the way you would do that. You join Mass Podcasters for deep insight for wank tips.
Wank tips. Hashtag wank tips.
And that's not just the tip. When I'm talking about wank tips, I'm talking about work the entire shaft.
You're digging. You're digging now.
like a graveyard. All I'm saying is work the entire shaft. Don't forget old Mr. Bullsack either. Now, so he does what the end result is designed to do in that scenario, and then pulls the bath plug out and exits. And he doesn't realize that he's being watched by Oliver. And then Oliver gets in the bathtub and proceeds to drink the bath water the remaining bath water, and then sort of lick the tub. And it's quite a distended scene and quite a closely shot scene. Again, not judgment intended for that act. If that's something that you're into, you've got my full blessing. But it's clearly designed to get people talking about how gross or how weird that scene is. Mm-hmm. And it, again, I think hurts the point that this is a plan. His plan ultimately is to remove all of them, but he's clearly obsessed with, in a sexualized way, Felix.
Yeah, but I also think Felix knows he's watching him. Because
you think so? You know that.
Well, I think so, because there's two scenes where Felix doesn't care that he left the door open. Doesn't care that he's been seen. But then when Oliver starts getting a little bit clingy and he gets a bit over him, the door is suddenly locked when he's having a bath. Right. So I'm not sure if he knows he's watching or doesn't care that he's watching or that he doesn't care he knows what he's doing. But I think that's a little bit of the mental state of Felix. But yeah, it's a gross scene. But again, it's you're right, it's hollow. There's no ramifications for it.
There's no commentary in this. He's an obsessed individual about a person who then still intends to kill him. And it's not, if I can't be with him, no one will. It's ultimately a financial gain, a status gain. And Felix has to die for that reason.
Well, here's my question for you. If Felix didn't find out his secret, would he have died? Because he only kills him after he knows his secret and wants him to leave.
But ultimately then, isn't his intention to get control of Saltburn? And he knows that Felix doesn't love him back in that way. So if he doesn't remove Felix, there's no plan.
But I wonder if he didn't find out his secret, what would have happened? And I think the same thing would have happened, because Felix would be like, it's summer, is ended now, you have to leave. Yeah. So the same result would have happened. I just don't think it would have been, probably would have been a day or two later. But at the end of the day, it would have been the same result.
The scene ultimately you're talking about. So before we get there, so everyone dies in the chain or is removed in other ways, except for Richard Egan's character, who dies naturally. So he basically leaves. He goes away for a long time, but he's still playing the long game. He dies. He then sets up a chance encounter with Elsbeth in a coffee shop.
Yep.
She still clearly thinks about him or has some sort of design. He then moves back into Saltburn and poisons her, I think.
Yeah.
She's in bed.
I don't like the ending, but anyway, go on.
She's in bed. He ultimately kills her. It's heavily implied or basically pointed out. He gives a very long diatribe bullshit kind of villain, you know, monologue at the end about how he planned all this, and then you get a series of flashbacks to show you how he's been planning it from the start. He then kills her, and then he's in control of Saltburn entirely.
He watches her write a new will and does the whole
thing. So she gives him Saltburn effectively, signs it all over, because she's now on her own. Her family is all dead. She's on her own, and she's desperately clinging to a level of family, and she clearly sees Oliver as family. And then he takes control, and suddenly with those shackles and those everything sort of released, he then gets naked and dances around to Murder on the Dance Floor by Sophie Alice Baxter. And that's the end of the film, right? Like,
yep.
But you also then see him go to Felix's grave. And what I understand is that this was a improvised scene.
It was, yes.
Takes all his clothes off and proceeds to try and have sex with the soil.
The script says he was meant to kiss the gravestone and kiss the soil.
Yeah.
And Oliver's character went one step further and actually gets naked and has sex with the soil, with the grave, which my biggest problem with this movie is that, one, the twist isn't a twist.
It's a pretty shit twist, right?
If you go, oh my God, I can't believe he was the one behind this all along, there's something seriously wrong with you.
You've not watched any movies. This is your first, welcome, ever. This is your very first movie you've ever
watched.
Your
very first movie ever. You know, you put on your big boy pants, you stop watching Toy Story, and now you're watching this. Now, but the biggest problem I have with it is that no one's very smart.
Yep.
This guy turns up, and all of a sudden people start dying from accidents, and no one questions the weird dude who shouldn't be there. Like, police are there, right? Police are there. They're there doing investigation, surely. It's a death. There's a coroner. But no one goes, that weird guy who was here 6 months ago, let's question him. Was he the last person to see Felix alive? Yes, he was. Is there fingerprints on the bottle that he died with? Yes, there is. I mean, surely there's, like, it's just so dumb.
And maybe that's a commentary on the rich being able to, to get around prosecution or whatever.
Show that. Show them talking to the coroner and be like, we don't want this to go any further. Let's just make it go away.
And they go, okay. There would be a level of embarrassment that Felix had died from a drug overdose potentially, so you make that one go away.
Yeah. And the suicides, and maybe they're highly Christian and they don't like suicide, so let's sweep that one under the rug too. But they don't show that. It just doesn't explain that. It's just like, oh, there's an accident. They're dead. We're moving on.
It's all very convenient and... Again, I think it asks you to suspend your disbelief and think that this plan was at least some level of this plan was in situ 8 years ago, 10 years ago, or whatever, and he's been slow burning it ever since because he was so obsessed with becoming the owner of a mansion. Like, it's stupid. Kind of, if he loves Felix and he's spurned, like, if you got a scene where he was deeply rejected by Felix.
Mm.
And that's enough to push him over or something like that.
Mm.
It seems to be this heavily implied, but then there's this, I think it's smarter than it thinks it is, or it thinks it's smarter than it is.
But I also think the problem is that they don't show Oliver loving Saltburn. Like, how good is this experience? My life was trash before I came here. Look at how amazing this is. I don't ever want to leave. There was none of that. He was always the same character. He was just obsessed with Felix. And yes. I think the end goal was to be with Felix, not to be Saltburn. And I think that progression needed to change from, yes, I love Felix, but now I love the life. And we didn't see that progression change throughout the movie. We saw the still obsession with Felix until the very last moment. And I think that's where it falls down.
The end feels unearned. It feels like a twist from a different movie. And again, it's just like, oh, look at all of the clever clues we left.
You didn't hide it.
You weren't clever. And you've actually given us a whole bunch of unlikable characters that we actually don't give a shit whether they live or die either.
No.
So once Felix goes, the kind of, well, that tension, that love triangle, that whatever, and it would have been, I think, a better story with a genuine love triangle in it, or some.
Well, see, I was waiting for the sister to proclaim her love for her brother.
Yeah,
that's what I was waiting for, and there was a love triangle there because, like, and there kind of was with the jealousy and never lets you play with these toys and all that stuff. I thought that was going to be the love triangle. And that just kind of fizzled out and didn't go anywhere. He kind of lied about that as well, and it went away.
I would have loved it. Like, I say, I would have loved, but it would have been good to have an incestuous relationship there, and it be discovered. And like, he could have been.
I thought it was in the maze. I thought that was the sister going with him.
Yeah,
and that was going to be the big thing.
It could have been a really strong twist as to why he was able to manipulate the family because he had this great secret. You've got a secret of mine, but I got a much bigger secret of yours. Yeah. And to have him turn into a real kind of a really obsessed, he's spurned, he's angry.
With the family, not with,
and he's going to crush the family, like
with the family, not take over the mansion as almost like a Knives Out scenario.
And it would have been better if he genuinely was poor. So he's bringing in a hatred of the rich.
Yes.
You know, I feel like it was a missed opportunity.
Half-assed everything.
As I said, I think that they thought it was much, they were much cleverer than they were, that no one would see this twist coming, and all of a sudden the water cooler talk would be, holy shit, did you see that twist coming? No way.
And how gross were some of those scenes? You can still have the gross scenes if you want to, but it's got to have some substance behind it.
Yeah, I just don't think they added anything to the story. I think if I'm being super cynical, they're there to drive that talk. They don't. I'd love to understand why the filmmaker thought that they were important. Why would you bring those scenes in? You can do those a different way. So you can do that with him just watching that act.
Yeah.
It took it to the next step of, okay, well, he's clearly, this is a sexual thing for him. We already knew that that was the case. I don't think we needed that scene or the graveyard scene. No. So the only person he feels sorry about losing is Felix.
Doesn't care about anyone else.
But he was motivated by society, being in a better society class.
But he also killed Felix. So why is he so upset about it? We're going around in circles, but I don't understand. I just think they half-assed everything and nothing kind of came together in the end. And all that had left for the movie was a weak psychological thriller and three gross scenes.
Yeah, but in a package that's incredibly well shot, well acted.
Yeah.
Pretty well paced. It's long. It's long. Particularly once you get to Saltburn, I reckon.
There's some scenes where they really drag out how big and vast the environment is, and I think that's on purpose.
It's unsettling. It's a rare movie that's not a horror movie that gave me just the heebie-jeebies the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, like it was, there was,
not,
there was
and not a, in a good way, not in a good
no,
way.
No, in an unsettling way. Yeah. And I think that's what it was getting at. And I thought that that was a bit of masterful kind of direction and set design and amping the tension where you just never felt comfortable watching it. And I think for that reason, I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah.
Because it is more than those gross scenes. And if all you know about it is because your friend on TikTok keeps talking about the bathtub scene, give it a watch. Watch it and see if it's deeper than what I think it is. I think it's incredibly shallow. I don't even think it's as deep as that bathwater. I think it's really hollow and shallow, but it's a pretty packaging that it's in.
I will say the way the movie kind of bookends itself at Saltburn with the grand tour delivered by Felix, like, look at all the stuff we have, look at this, and then the reverse side of him dancing naked through the hallway was brilliant. I love how it ended. I thought that scene was fantastic.
And good on Barry Keoghan, because I'm just putting my dong out everywhere, and now I know what Barry Keoghan's penis looked like. So
yeah.
that's something I didn't know beforehand.
Multiple times. Yeah. But I think it's a great ending to the movie, and I think a great scene to end a pretty poor movie.
It's weird. It's weird in its own right.
It's weird, but well set, like well. And it fits the universe.
It's not my genre of music, but that song slaps.
It does slap. It slaps.
I don't know what happened to her.
Like his penis jumping around, it slaps. I will say,
you're a bit of an editor. Can you take out the music and just have just slapping sounds?
Slapping sounds.
Because he would have had to film that on the set in silence.
Oh no, there would have been music playing.
No, he could because you can get the bleed from the so.
No, it'd be music playing. He'd have an earpiece or something.
No, he was slapping it all over the place.
The original ending was him waking up in a very fancy robe, going downstairs, and then the butler man, Duncan, I think his name was, would serve him eggs, and that was the end of the movie. I think that they made the right choice in doing that. Now, recommendation, Shan. You said you're glad you saw it. Would you recommend this to the fellow person to say, or are you a kind of just Google the gross scenes and move on with it?
No, I would watch them in spite of the gross scenes because I actually don't think they mean anything. I think, unfortunately for this film, in 5 years' time, people will only remember the gross stuff.
Yeah.
Is they won't remember. It's not going to join that lexicon. Unfortunately, its legacy is going to be, oh, that's the movie with the bathtub scene.
Yeah.
And I think because it is such a shallow, hollow movie, And maybe that's the point, is that rich people are ultimately very pretty but shallow and hollow. Mm. I don't know. That might be it. But if it had any biting commentary or anything to say about class wars, it's a better movie, but it doesn't. It has nothing to say. And I think that's the shame of it. Would I still watch it? Am I sad that I lost that? No. I would absolutely watch it. I'd probably still tell people to watch it because it's not just those scenes.
No. And I think it's interesting that we had a different interpretation of what Felix's, what Oliver's motivation was and how Felix reacted to the news of him finding out he was lying. So I think that's there's a lot of interpretation that you can take from this movie and how you look at the class wars and what you see differently. So I'm interested in other people's analysis. So yeah, I'd recommend it as well.
It's shot like an A-grade movie. Like it genuinely looks and is incredibly well acted.
I felt it looked the very first 20, 30 minutes before I got to Saltburn. I'm like, this is shot from like 1990. It looked.
It is of a period too. The music clearly gives you a early 2000s window.
Yeah.
So it gives you a really early 2000s or mid 2000s, early 2000s lens on a time period. It doesn't need to be set there. I think that probably the director liked the music of that time. It doesn't need to be there. But it is a really good look at a very stuffy, rich college and how that operates. But also then it's a peek behind the curtain of how the rich actually genuinely live. There will be families in England that will operate like this. Even more so than the rich American families. This is very British, incredibly British, aristocratic, high society, but old money, and still clinging to the glory days of society when everyone dressed up for dinner. So there is, from that perspective, it's a really masterful, and it made you feel of the period. I really felt like I was in that world, in that family, that they were a real family. They were caricatures of rich people, but they felt very real and lived in. The environment felt lived in.
Yeah.
It's just a really shallow peek behind the curtain. And from what I understand, the director comes from high society. So she understands this world, which is great, but she's not brave enough to take a real shot at people.
Definitely.
So it's a look behind the curtain, but don't be too critical because that's my life. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, definitely.
So in terms of a letter grade, it's a hard one. From a filmmaking perspective, it's an A minus. From a story and a total encapsulation, it's like a C. So it averages out to a B minus. I don't know. Does that seem fair?
I'd say a C plus. Like I didn't enjoy my time with it. But I still think people should see it. But I didn't enjoy my time with it.
It's a weird one. Like ordinarily, I would say to people, don't waste your time because it's shallow and hollow. But I actually think it's worth watching, and it's worth watching, I think, in spite of some of those scenes.
I agree.
And I'm not a prude at all. Like I said, you do what you like, but I think it takes away from the story and they're confusing in that sense. That's what they are. They're there for shock value and that's kind of it. I don't think they push the story along.
No.
And that's disappointing, right? Like,
it is. It definitely is. Well, I think that's all we need to say about that one, Shane. I think we've run around in circles.
You know, and I can't even see the time on this new thing. What are we talking about?
We are looking at 54 minutes.
See, it couldn't have been a Zoom call. I was right.
And I've got a game I want to play with you, Shane. And I know social media isn't your big thing, but I do. It's a very quick game.
Apart from the Kardashians, I'm a massive Kardashian fan.
I know you are. You're up to date 100%. It's a little game I've seen played on social media, and it's very, very simple. Okay, I'm going to give you five random movies, right? You need to put them in order from 1 to 5. The only problem is you don't know the movies ahead of time.
Okay.
So and your answers are locked in.
Okay.
So if I give you 5 movies and you put your favorite movie at number 5, it's locked number 5.
So am I giving you my favorite movie of this 5?
No, I will give you 5 movies.
Yeah.
And you've only got 5 spots to put them in. Blind spots to put them in.
Okay.
So say let's say for example, I said this is not one of the movies, but I said Toy Story.
Yep.
Where would you put that without knowing the other 5 movies? You got to put it somewhere between 1 and 5, and it's locked in. You can't change. Okay. Those.
But I don't know the category in which I'm
Category. Banking. These are superhero movies I'm going to give you now.
Okay.
Okay. So and okay. I'm going to randomly say them. I've written down the yep. five. I'm going to randomly say them. Here we go. And you could get you know, Thor: The Dark World as your last movie. So be careful. Okay. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So number one.
Yep.
Spider-Man 2.
The Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Tobey Raimi Spider-Man.
Three.
Three. Okay. The Dark Knight.
Two.
Two. Deadpool.
Four.
Iron Man. You got one or five left?
One.
One. Thor Ragnarok is number five.
I suppose. Yeah.
Number five. So you got Iron Man, Dark Knight, Spider-Man 2, Deadpool, and Thor Ragnarok.
It's not actually that far away.
It's not. I'd change a few, but it's pretty good.
Not far away. I think Ragnarok is higher.
Yes, I agree.
And I would put Spider-Man 2 last.
Yes, I'll probably put it as well. But
here's what I thought you were going to do: is you were going to throw me a bunch of Spider-Man movies, and I was hedging my bets that Spider-Man 2 is middle of the road for me in terms of Spider-Man movies. That's where I thought you might be going.
No,
I thought, and then you'd get to the last one, and it'd be Spider-Man 3, and I'd be stuck, or the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yes, and you'd be really stuck.
And I would be stuck. But no, well, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with
okay. See, super quick
maybe
game.
That's a recurring.
I like that game. I play it with the children. I like that game.
So, I think just to round this off, because I can't do a podcast under an hour.
No.
We've obviously had a lot of time off.
Yep.
Without notice, are there some gems that you've discovered recently that you'd want to send people to, that maybe we haven't spoken about?
Honestly, I've been pretty disappointed with the movies I've seen recently. Like I haven't seen a lot of. I've gone back and watched older movies. Like I went back and rewatched Back to the Future and and some more of the classic movies that I've been missing out on. I went and saw Wonka with the children.
Timothy Chalamet.
And I liked it. I liked it. I mean, it wasn't the same level as Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It was no Gene Wilder, but it was bloody. It was you got that feeling, the Tim Burton monstrosity that was whatever the version.
Horrendous movie, yeah.
That felt shallow and this felt full of love and felt love for the old movie and the original movie and a lot of the same cues and songs, and it was nice. The story was a bit weird, but I liked it. Like I saw Aquaman 2. Hated the first one. Hated the second one. I was doing one of your Justice League. No, was Justice League or Batman vs Superman? Sitting in the chair, forward, angry,
being very very upset.
Very upset. I saw Barbie. I saw all those kind of movies. I saw Oppenheimer. I mean, Oppenheimer's not a dark horse. It's in all the Oscar buzz at the moment. It's very very good. Surprise surprise. Impeccably acted. What a great movie that was. I mean, it's one of those movies, though, like Chris, I mean, side tangent, Christopher Nolan makes great movies, right? He makes fantastic movies. How often do you go back and watch Christopher Nolan movies?
Well, I think other than the Batman movies.
Yeah, other than Batman.
And a movie that I think is insanely rewatchable to try and work out is Memento.
Yeah.
I think because they are an event.
You watch them once and you never go back to them. I haven't seen Tenet again.
No, I don't think I could put myself through Tenet again.
I wouldn't. And I don't think I'm going to put myself through Oppenheimer again. Mm. But it was one of the best movies of last year.
Yeah. I would love to see Christopher Nolan take on just a really random property.
Give me an hour and a half movie, Christopher Nolan.
I want him to redo Police Academy. That's what I want. His next. I'd love to see Christopher Nolan's gritty take on Police Academy. For mine, I think I watched again the other day The Platform on Netflix, horror movie. I think it's in Spanish. Incredible movie, really basic premise, done incredibly well. It's a movie that I would implore people to watch. I think it's a really good movie. I rewatched Ready or Not the other day. If you haven't seen that, seriously go watch Ready or Not.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie. Like, it's just so good.
I'll jump in. I watched Wish and Migration.
Two animated movies, yeah.
Two animated movies, one Disney, one elimination. It happened.
They're definitely movies. And to be honest, I've sort of shied away from going to the movies recently. And I haven't seen Barbie or Oppenheimer for that reason. And we may well do them on the podcast, and that'll give me an excuse to watch them. But yeah, I think there's lots of cool stuff coming out routinely on Netflix. I think a lot of the YouTube shows are doing good stuff. I'll again pimp Dead Meat. I'm still watching religiously. You know, I think there's some good stuff that's happening, and it's much more how I consume my content now, with short bite-sized pieces of content.
Yeah, they did the menu last week, which they did do the menu.
And again, if you haven't listened to our podcast episode, is it one of the last ones we did, Jake?
It is the last one we did.
Just a phenomenal movie, and would happily watch that and watch it again. I like the horror genre because I think it still does stuff that's a bit unique and a bit weird. And I think there's a lot of good movies around that are just waiting to be discovered that aren't theatrical releases, and maybe that's the way of the world. But it's, you know, you do rely a little bit on society to tell you, hey, that there's some cool stuff coming out, and then you get stuff like Saltburn that's, I think, viral for the wrong reasons.
Well, I mean, if the movies came out, like big movies have been anticipated for ages, like Five Nights at Freddy's, like those kind of, it's just supremely average. The Marvels did horribly at the box office, you know.
Well, they did because the quality's gone. Yeah. You know, like we're telling stories about characters that people don't care about, and we're not. Realistically, unless you're going to bring back Iron Man and Captain America, are people interested in the next Avengers?
No. As you can tell by Quantumania, Marvels, even Doctor Strange, they're all just slowly downhill the sales. And then what happens? Spider-Man comes out, and all three Spider-Men are together. Boom, $1 billion.
But I think, more so with Spider-Man than others, is that I feel like now Marvel is making me do homework, that I've got to get through 5 or 6 shows that I don't actually want to watch so that I can understand those movies when I walk into the cinema. Whereas Spider-Man is a little bit like that, but it assumes that you've seen the other Spider-Men, that you assume that you've seen those. Whereas now please don't assume that I've seen all of your crappy TV shows before I get to walk into a Marvel movie. I didn't have to do that last time.
Yeah.
For the first run, I didn't need to. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I never saw. Never saw an episode, and it didn't matter. Now it's highly dependent that I've seen them all.
There's one reference, there's one storyline that takes place in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that affects the Avengers movies, but you wouldn't know it or care about it.
No. But now it just seems like I've got to do homework. You've got to
watch WandaVision. You've got to watch Loki. You have to watch Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Echo.
You've got to watch all those so that I can work it out what's happening. And I think that there is some, I still think there's some quality movies being made. Look, Quantumania is fine. Paul Rudd is very charming as Ant-Man.
I just haven't seen anything that's blown me away. And Oppenheimer was 3.5 hours long, and it was great, but it didn't blow me away.
I'm still waiting for the menu.
The menu type movie is what I want,
They are the sleeper, the soft burns, which a lot of social media get right. Like, there is buzz that happens out of this stuff. You know, the menu got picked up and was talked about, rightfully so, because it's an incredible piece of filmmaking and beautifully well acted.
Parasite was another example. Sleeper in the Oscars, won the Oscars. Everyone talked about it. It's a phenomenal movie.
Yeah,
but
so
I just don't have those.
Some of that buzz, but for every buzz that you pick up on, you get a Saltburn who gives you the bum steer, and it's buzz for the wrong reason. And we
need to watch Barbie, Shan. We need to watch Barbie.
Maybe that's the next episode, is Barbie. MarksPodcasters@gmail.com. Please write in if you want me to watch Barbie. I haven't yet. If you want to see me,
I'm writing an email right now.
Bananas. I will watch Barbie. But look, the other thing I would call out is if you found a sleeper, if there's something that you've stumbled across that you want us to watch, let us know. MarksPodcasters@gmail.com, because the only way to do that is to spread the message about some of these movies that don't get picked up. And there's a lot of garbage on Netflix and surrounds. There's a lot of garbage, and it's our duty to actually put some good ones back on the, you know, back into the hemisphere, and try and pimp some of these ones that are not getting the views. So, yeah, hit us up, masspodcasters@gmail.com. But from me, thank you very much for listening. And I'm going to throw to Jake, knowing he doesn't have an end line.
Is there a knowing line?
You could have just made a slurping sound. Yeah, the slapping of the Barry Keoghan. That is a beautiful representation of Barry Keoghan slapping sack bag.
Slappy across his thigh.
And please don't forget poor old Mr. Ballsack.
I mean, he's an impersonator. A fake. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you the following urgent announcement. You, yes you, put down that oversized bottle of Scrumpy and listen here. Do you like being entertained? Do you like television? Do you cringe at culturally insensitive, sexist, racist, problematic jokes in not-quite-old-enough television shows? Do you like old-timey announcers who keep asking inane rhetorical questions, who go on and on so much that you just want to suck them right in the gusset? Do you like the letter H? Well, do we have the show for you! Built for people who love TV, where three rapscallions dissect two television shows, one old and one not so old, for a probable audience of 1-7. So dust off your flares, jump off your chamber pot, and a third old-timey product joke, it's time for Hardly TV History.